Welcome, great patriotic friends, to December 26th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. And as I, your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and one of the reasons why I do this show is because I am on a mission from Uncle Sam to make American history as fun and exciting as one could possibly make a history podcast. By the way, don't forget to check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Let me know what you think about today's ep. This is an interactive show, scholars, so do get involved. Your comments and questions are highly appreciated, so thank you very much for that. I assembled the show from a tool shed in my backyard in La Mesa, California, right next to America's finest city, San Diego. By the way, if you're looking to move to the area, or if you have any questions about real estate, check out TeresaLovesRealEstate.com, because as a full-service Encinitas and San Diego real estate professional, Teresa works with buyers, sellers, and investors in real estate transactions. So yeah, check it out, TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. And now, let's begin the show as we customarily do with the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags, and put our right hands over our hearts, and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen, brothers and sisters. And now on to today's headlines. Battle of Trenton Part 4, Washington surprises the Haitians. Plus, JonBenet Ramsey is found dead, and we'll talk about the first Kwanzai. All right, so now let's do this. 1777, Battle of Trenton Part 4. Washington personally leads the attack on British and Haitian flank. And of course it was personal. General George Washington was the subject of replacement commander for the Continental Army, was losing his army as of December 31st, and was doing everything he could to rally his troops. The Haitian army, led by Johann Rall, decided to take Christmas Day off due to bad intelligence, thanks to the help of one of Washington's spies, John Honeyman. Revolution financier Robert Morris gave a huge payment to the troops, motivating them just in time before complete desertion or worse. Of course, the Americans had lost New York and Philly, but Washington would not lose New Jersey. As the snoring Haitian mercenaries woke up to gunfire, 900 British soldiers spilled out, only to face a ginormous cannon in the streets that mowed them all down like bowling pins on a straight. Or a strike. Whatever. I don't bowl. Sorry. Another great part of the story is that Rall was actually tipped off of this. In many alternate realities, in fact, Colonel Rall finds counterintel in a note that gave up the plan, but in pretty much all of these realities, he ignores the note, which, by the way, in this section of the multiverse, was found in his pocket 2 days after he died in the battlefield. Those silly mercs. And now here we are. So, who's doing the hiding now, General William Howe? Why, the mercs were. That's who. Taking refuge behind houses, only to be faced by American bayonets. Washington had taken Rall and about 900 Haitian mercenaries prisoner in about an hour. I mean, even my gym workouts are usually longer than that. And you really wouldn't know by looking at me. But anyway, the Battle of Trenton would wind up to be a huge victory, just like Princeton would be on January 3rd. This victory for Washington removed any doubt he was in command of his army. The man who had one day squashed a rebellion regarding whiskey taxes during his presidency now would take the rear and decimate the flank on this day in 1777, and would be rewarded greatly because of it. This victory also led to another one with Congress, allotting 16 additional infantry, 3 artillery, 3,000 cavalry, plus the option to get food and blankets from civilians. Meanwhile, British General Henry Clinton was waiting for Washington's next move in Princeton, which I will get into on my January 3rd ep. To be continued. 1966. The first Kwanzai. It was started by Dr. Milana Karenga as a celebration of African family, community, and culture. Today, it's celebrated by millions of people of African descent throughout America and Canada. So happy Kwanzai if you're celebrating that. And so that wraps up December 26th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I'm your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com, as well as the Facebook page. Let me know what you thought about today's episode. Or how about some of the stuff that's on the website that I didn't talk about today? For instance, Did trading Babe Ruth to the Yankees start a Red Sox curse? Or is that just crazy superstition nonsense? So yeah, let me know what your take is. And be sure to check out tomorrow's program. Radio City Music Hall opens. I'll talk about the Dewey Decimal System, the coffee percolator, plus Jack Johnson TKO's Tommy Burns, and FDR seizes control of Montgomery Wards. All right, so now don't miss that. And until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans, and we will see you tomorrow. 1999, JonBenet Ramsey is found dead. On Christmas night, John and Patsy Ramsey, a very wealthy couple, was having a Christmas party. Little JonBenet, their daughter who was a celebrity at the time, was tucked into bed at 9 p.m. But in the morning she was gone, and Patsy found a ransom note demanding 18 large for her return. The police were called and came over. They waited for the ransom call, but it never came. The note was very strange. First of all, it was 3 pages long. I mean, like most ransom notes I've ever seen have had the words spelled out from cut and pasted magazine articles, so that way no one would recognize the handwriting. Or maybe I just watched too many movies. No, but seriously, the note went on and on about who the kidnappers were and how they were going to behead JonBenet and blah, 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 and a bunch of other gibberish. What really made the story interesting wasn't the fact that JonBenet was a 6-year-old celebrity. It was the fact that the investigation was full of holes. For instance, why ask for $18,000? Interestingly enough, John had just gotten an $18,000 Christmas bonus. So did the killer work with John? Or did John write the letter himself? Coming up with a quick answer to the question, how much money should I demand for my fabricated note? Right. Either way, it's silly. Now, I don't know how much Colorado taxes on Christmas bonuses, but here in California where I live, it's 50%. That note should have asked for $9,000, not 18, if that were the case. And then the money was to be delivered in a brown paper bag, which is odd, because in movies, it's usually in a briefcase. Duh. I'm so sure. And the note was signed Victory, whatever that means. The paper that the note was written on came from inside the Ramsey house. Supposedly, after finding the note, Patsy called 911, and that call was weird. She said to the operator, "We have a kidnapping." Look, if your child has been kidnapped, you're probably not going to call 911 and say, "We have a code 207 Alpha here." Now, human beings don't do that. As parents, if our kids are missing, we're calling 911, freaking out. "We have a kidnapping here." And then Patsy hung up on the 911 operator, instead of staying on the phone until the police arrived. "Yeah, okay, I'll see you when you get here. Bye-bye." Yeah. So 8 hours after she was reported missing, John Ramsey found her child's body in the basement, strangled with a fractured skull. And that was after the police had checked the house. Can you imagine? Found her. Yeah, she's in the basement. She's looking a little blue, but she's here. I mean, come on. There was also a broken mirror in the basement and no footprints leading inside with snow-covered tracks. Christmas in Colorado? Yeah, it was snowing outside. They would have showed up on the basement floor. And I guess we also can just ignore that undisturbed spiderweb at the point of entry. So there was a suitcase in the basement, which Ramsey's claimed to have never seen. It contained a blanket with semen on it and a copy of the Jungle Book. The sperm on the blanket belonged to JonBenet's older half-brother, who was John's son from a previous marriage. Police say that they proved that he wasn't in Boulder at the time. But okay, if we're going to look at family members, what about Burke, the 9-year-old brother? He hated his little sister and was jealous of her fame. In fact, at one point, JonBenet had accused him of smearing his own excrement on her bedroom walls just because he wanted to be gross. But he was clear too. JonBenet was found with a cord wrapped around her neck and a drop of blood in her underwear that didn't match anything on the police record database. So, if it wasn't the family, who was it? The case is still open. They took a look at the possibility of a local Santa Claus, a neighbor, and a school teacher, all three men being very creepy in nature, but none of them present during the scene of the crime. Well, rock on, conspiracy theorists. Here's one for ya. JonBenet never actually died. She grew up to become Katy Perry. I didn't make that up. I got it from a website called 22something.com. And even though Katy Perry has a heck of a sense of humor, I doubt that she would even think that's funny. Whatever happened, rest in peace, JonBenet.